Welcome again to Take Off, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Travis, and today we're talking about something that everyone loves and gets super excited about and always knows that it means great things: loyalty program updates. And I hope you caught at least a hint of sarcasm in that.
Just a little dash.
Just
exciting updates for our users.
Yeah.
Oh, there's been some shakeups. There's two programs we're going to cover for y'all today. These are the changes to the World of Hyatt and United Mileage Plus that's happening now in 2026. So if you're listening to this in 2034, these have already happened.
And probably again.
Probably been some changes since then. Yeah. But if you are listening in 2026, we're going to be sharing with you what these updates are, and more importantly, what it means for you and your point strategy. Is this a true devaluation? Is this just evolution? Or is this one of those, the game changed, but it's still winnable moments? Stick around and find out. Of course, as usual, Matt and Emily are here with me, and we're going to break down what changed, what hurts the heart and soul, what doesn't, and what we might be doing differently going forward with World of Hyatt and United. Two programs that we all love, Hyatt for sure. I at least love United and try to convince all of you that you should love United. But before we get started, as always, let's do our icebreaker. What redemption would hurt you the most if it doubled in price tomorrow?
My answer is the Alila Ventana Big Sur. And I say that with jealousy in my heart because Matt just went. my husband and I went on our mini moon, and we've been talking recently about going back. And now I don't think I'm going back. Yeah,
just book it.
Well, for when?
A year out.
Okay.
I tried that recently, and I think I saw one night.
Yeah. You can just book like one night in a row, like, you know, as they come available as they or something, open. and then stitch them together. Yeah.
I guess that makes sense.
If you want,
yeah.
And honestly, what's up? Tip, which I'm happy to give away now. That place is going to be a bajillion points tonight. Sorry, spoiler alert for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
I've done this a couple times at hotels and I've had a very mixed but surprisingly better result at it. And like in this, I'm not even calling it a strategy, it's a complete gamble, but I booked a suite for the first night and then a regular room for the other nights, mainly because the regular room wasn't available for the first night, but we kind of wanted to go that date. Well, it turns out at check-in, I was able to convince them to just let me stay in the suite for the entire time. So I overpaid for the first night and came out ahead on the rest of the nights, which in lieu of, also again, spoiler alert, today's news, makes me feel a lot less bad about paying whatever it was, 70-some thousand points for that first night.
Yeah.
Wow, okay. I didn't realize that had been successful for you. That's awesome.
I've done that probably 10 or 12 times, not just at Ventana, but like a number of places. Sometimes it doesn't work, but it has worked more for me than not. Elite says probably helps, but is not guaranteed.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I looked at Ventana right before the Hyatt news broke, and it was only the suites available at like 75K that I think Emily mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't want to pay that, but now maybe I just will.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the regular rates are
It's the new price
going to be that soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yes, so, if you look basically a year out, well, now that the
news is out.
Is out and people are going crazy, that's probably less of an option. But that's how I did it.
Yeah.
So
all right. Well, I'll give it a go.
Or last minute. Since you are on the West Coast, you can just hop on down.
I can just drive, actually.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. What about you, Matt?
For me, I'm going to go with Park Hyatt Paris. I know this is kind of one of the Points and Miles hotels that I feel like people that do Points and Miles is kind of a milestone place. But we've been, I think, four or five times. We love that hotel. Pretty much any time we go to Paris, we stay there. So Again, spoiler alert. With today's news, I'm not sure that that's going to be maintained. We'll see. But that one would be a real bummer to not be able to go back to.
Oh, I think mine is probably in similar vein to all of y'all's. It's hopefully no surprise. The Park Hyatt Maldives. We've been wanting to go back, and now it feels more urgent than ever to get back there. So maybe I need to check some of those dates for next year as well while I still can.
Yeah. Should we just hop off this podcast and book stuff?
Yeah, okay. Sorry. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
or this whole podcast is just going to be us booking stuff.
Yeah. Hop over to our Twitch account and watch us live live book our awards days.
Hey. Boy. Something to that. I don't know.
That's how... As far as I know, we don't have a Twitch account, but no better time than the present, apparently, is what we're learning from Hyatt.
Hey, all these streamers make bajillions of dollars just living their lives. Surely we can make bajillions of dollars just booking hotels and flights. What the world has come to.
Report back.
Unbelievable.
Take a stab.
Yeah, okay, I'll let you know.
Well, if you can't tell, there's some unfortunate news to Hyatt. So I guess there's no better time than now to kind of go through what the updates to the World of Hyatt program in 2026 are. Keep in mind, this starts in May of this year. Now, I don't know if that's May 1st or May 31st or May 17th or Cinco de Mayo. It's happening in May is what we know. Maybe they
published it. At least as of the time we're recording this. This may, yeah. Before this goes live, they may have announced a date, but yes.
Maybe they'll hear our commentary and decide... You know what? Oh, we're not going to do this.
May of 2027. It's been delayed.
I mean, for the sake of moving quickly, I would just assume it's going to be May 1st. Don't dilly-dally.
Nope. Yeah. Assume May 1st. So here's what's happening. Hyatt is getting rid of its three-tier. So pre-change, all Hyatts break up into off-peak, standard, and peak. And now they're replacing it with five tiers. Ooh. I mean, you can give it like jazz hands or jazz hand. There's going to be lowest, low, moderate, upper, and top. I don't know why they went with moderate instead of just standard there. Like,
or like middle, or I don't know.
This change just, I mean, five price point ranges, or I guess it's a classification per category.
Yeah.
I mean, they are so gung-ho in this news that, yeah, we're still offering an award chart. Like, no, you're not. This is, you are essentially on the line of dynamic pricing.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you include, like, there's eight categories of hotels, each one will have five different pricing levels. They also have separate award charts for, like, all-inclusives and I think the Miraval properties.
Yep.
There's almost, like, 80 different price points.
Yeah, that's dynamic pricing.
They're like pretending to be transparent when, like, you know, Marriott technically doesn't publish it, but you know that like a top tier property is going to typically be between like 85 to 125,000 points a night with some exclusions to that. Even though they don't publish what it is, like there's a pattern that you can follow. Hyatt is doing the exact same thing. They're just telling you what the pattern is and trying to spin it as positive and transparency.
It's still
and
an
so
award
happy.
Chart. And
it's
Yeah. I mean, if you look at some of the ranges, like if you look at the highest category eight Hyatt property, the very, like, what do they call it? Lowest pricing category could be like 35,000 points, but the highest could be 75,000 points per night.
120%,
so that's not helpful.
120% variance in a category. Like, come on. Yeah.
It's a huge swing.
Yeah.
It's a huge swing.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be what, eight categories with, like you said, that pricing just being dramatically changing it within them. So like, a category eight right now, off peak 35K, standard 40K, peak 45K, right? You've got a 10,000 point range to work with. But with these changes in May, 35,000 points is still the low end. That'll be the lowest, I believe, is what they call it. So there'll be like two nights a year.
Yeah.
But they can charge up to 75,000 for the top price.
Yeah.
Like that's...
Yeah. I mean, just an extra 40,000 per night because you wanted to travel over spring break instead of...
Yeah. Well, it's like, this is the same argument I've made when Marriott made these changes, when Hilton made these changes years ago. It just makes planning for travel and knowing how many points you need impossible to essentially budget for. Because you just have to budget for the worst. And if you find anything better than that, then yippee. But, you know, if you're going to go try and stay at presumably any of the Park Hyatts, like I said, during spring break or over a holiday or whatever, you better plan on 70,000, 75,000 points per night. Anything less and you're coming out ahead now, but sort of expect the worst. And I don't care what they say. Like, you know, points are only going to go up. Like 40% of our nights will still be low or lowest or, you know, like whatever. Like, no. That's fine. Nobody cares about Sundays and Mondays.
They haven't said there's a cap. Like they're correct. So they could make every single night.
Right.
The top.
I don't think they came out clearly and said this, but usually there will be an argument of basically to try and sugarcoat it. Like we know this looks worse on the surface, but we're committing to offering, you know, 40% of the calendar at low and lowest or, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like, of course, like, the all-inclusives and Miraval properties are still going to have a completely separate award chart now, also with these five tiers. Here's what I think is maybe the easiest way to compare the old to the new is look at the standard, because we don't know how it's going to break down. The standard rate right now to the moderate rate across all eight categories, it's increasing. So they are increasing, let's call it the base rate across every single category.
Yeah. Like some of the lower tier or lower category hotels have decreased pricing at the lowest rate, but that's great. Maybe I'll save 1,000 points a night on a category two hotel, which like I'm not saying is bad. Fine. That I'll take the savings. But when you're increasing all the like aspirational properties by, I don't know, double... potentially. You're hurting a lot of the people who, you know, plan for these trips that they would never pay cash for.
Sorry, we're laughing because Matt just knocked something over with his microphone.
Me? No, I would never do that.
I'll be honest, like to Emily's point, like most people don't care so much about the category ones. Like I'm sure there are people who do and get value from them, but for most people, like that's not where the real value is at. There's also no clarification yet on whether the category 1 through 4 free night certificates are changing. So fingers crossed you can use them even at the top level pricing. But again, like at this point, it being restricted to category 1 through 4 just feels like it's not that helpful at the end of the day. Like,
I mean, there's an argument to be made for like, oh wow, the top pricing at a category 4, now my certificate is worth more points, but it's like not.
Yeah.
There are a few things that have changed that they've used to try and sugarcoat things. First thing is anyone who's a Hyatt Explorist member and above, as well as cardholders, will get a month early access to award availability. I don't think we really know exactly how this will play out yet, but I mean, I'll take it.
How it's going to play out. I'll tell you how this is going to play out. Yeah. Is the hotels are going to raise the rates really high for that extra month. So that way they're all whatever the top pricing is, because like for people who don't know this, like most of the hotels are like independently owned and operated. They're just licensing the brand from Hyatt. And so when you redeem points with Hyatt to stay there, Hyatt pays them, Hyatt corporate pays the hotel based off of occupancy and what the published rate
in dollars.
Yeah.
In dollars. Okay. Yeah. And so I don't know why the hotels, if they're opening up this availability early, just wouldn't make the prices really high. So that way they're probably getting reimbursed at a higher rate for these people who are booking early, which means Hyatt will just be incentivized to open it as top level availability.
Here's the interesting argument on that is if I'm a hotel operator, it doesn't matter to me what the points cost per night is, because the hotels get reimbursed based on the occupancy rate of the hotel. So yeah. they want to push for highest occupancy on a points booking.
Yeah, that's true.
So in a weird way, they would actually be incentivized to lower the price points per night to try and drive up that occupancy rate to ensure that the reimbursement rate from corporate is maximized. But I'm sure there are rules and restrictions from corporate about like essentially how much games they can play on this to not, you know, essentially game it too much so that they're not always running at 99% occupancy or something like that.
Yeah.
So that I would be interested if anybody's a independent hotel operator and wants to send me an email and let me know on this. I am very intrigued and would welcome such information.
Or hell, if you want to come be a guest, like I think that would be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm just skeptical of this one, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
Like,
I'm
just skeptical.
My piece with this is I like the concept of it just in a vacuum by itself. I think this kind of plays into what we'll talk about later, what United is doing. They're basically saying, hey, like, we're here for our elite members and our cardholders and want to give them extra benefits and extra values. So if you draw the line for me right then and there, love that. The caveat to that is kind of like what Travis was saying. I anticipate, and maybe it's an unfair characterization, I don't know. I anticipate lots of games will be played with this, and it won't be as good and valuable as a benefit as it maybe could be or is necessarily designed to be.
Yeah. I hope we're wrong.
Yeah, I'm very skeptical and would love to be proved wrong on it.
I guess we'll have to find out in May.
Yeah, exactly. This next feature is the one I'm most excited about and is probably going to be the one that has to be used the most, since you'll essentially have to like mortgage your Hyatt points to be able to actually redeem them moving forward starting in May. If anybody has never, one, didn't know this, or two, has never done it, Hyatt allows you to freely transfer points between accounts, which is a little bit atypical compared to some of the other programs. A lot of other programs either really, really restrict the number of points you can transfer or charge you a lot of money to transfer and combine points. So Hyatt is a little bit unique in that you can more or less transfer whatever you want. There are some timing restrictions on it, but you can transfer points to other accounts to essentially combine points to make a booking, which is super, super helpful. And the problem is you have to fill out a PDF and then send it in to like, I forget what the email address. It's like combinedpoints@hyatt.com or something like that. And then just wait.
Yeah.
And then at some point they'll email you back to be like, yeah, we combined your points, or no, this is wrong. You know,
right.
fix this PDF, send it back in and wait another week or two to combine. It is. I mean, it's basically like faxing in a request in this day and age.
I think we did it together once, Matt, maybe for Hyatt Sydney.
Yep.
And like we each had to sign the PDF before we could email it in.
No, that's exactly right. So it is a complete cluster.
Yeah.
And maybe I think that was by design to just disincentivize people from using it. Basically, kind of like we're saying, it's an advertised benefit, but let's make it difficult to use to prohibit people from actually using it. Well done, Hyatt. I think you succeeded in that, most likely. But great news, that's coming online now. So there will be a digital workflow to be able to do that. And you won't have to use this archaic PDF submission and then sit back and wait and hope that it works through workflow to do it. So like I said, I think this feature will get used a lot more because people are going to have to, you know, split points cost. I don't think there'll be a, hey, I'll get these first two nights, you get the next two nights. Because as you could see what we talked about just a minute ago, those first two nights could be like 40,000 points more than the next two nights. So depending on where you're staying in the one of the five categories that it's going to, I mean, like tiers it's going to fall
points,
into. Price points. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this is probably the only one where I feel bad for whoever the one person's job at Hyatt was to check that email and go in and click a few things to move these points. Because like that person's probably out of a job. But I'm sure it was like one single person because no one seemed to know about this. And with how long it took, it was... Yay for one nice benefit,
I guess. If you are that person, feel free to come on the pod.
Yeah. In addition, 7. Whew, now, this happened immediately. This is not happening in May. 7 hotels changed. category.
And this is a lot less than usual. Usually, like this time of year, there's a big announcement. Hundreds of hotels are changing categories, but they give you some advance notice. This time there's a lot less, but it happened with basically no notice.
Yeah. It's the Andaz Pattaya Jomtien. I probably said that really wrong.
It's the Andaz in Thailand.
There you go. Went from a 4 to a 5. Can't use your free night certificates anymore. Uh-huh. Hyatt Centric in Malta went from a 2 to a 3. Hyatt Regency Kotor Bay Resort in Montenegro went from a 4 to a 5. Can't use your free night certificates.
This next one's anymore. My favorite one.
Oh, the Hyatt Place San Antonio Northwest Medical Center. Sorry for all of you Cat 1 people. It's a Cat 2 now. the Grand Hyatt Incheon in South Korea went from a 3 to a 4. The Barnett, which is a Joy de Vivre by Hyatt in New Orleans, went from a 5 to a 4. Congratulations, you can use your free night certificates there. And probably the most absolutely egregious.
This is unbelievable.
Of them all is the Grand Hyatt Grand Cayman Resort and Spa, which isn't even open yet, which you cannot even stay there until June 1st of this year, went from a 6 to an 8. So you never could have, it never was a category 6. It just always has been a category.
Has it been open for booking?
It is now. I don't know when they opened it, but what I do know is that they have like on their website, a like booking notice and you click learn more and it says now accepting reservations for stays from June 1st, 2026 beyond. I know I looked at this late last year and it was not accepting reservations.
I want to know what the boardroom was like when they decided to target the Hyatt Place San Antonio Northwest Medical Center.
Yeah, seriously.
They were like, wow,
these are
really deserves a higher price.
Back to my kind of earlier point about how, you know, that was more based on availability, but like usually how this works is they'll shuffle a lot of these like Cat 4s down to Cat 3s, Cat 2s to 1s, like a lot of Hyatt Places, Hyatt House, kind of some of the lower tier Hyatts to offset the ratio of the higher end ones that they're bumping up in category. So they'll say, hey, only 12% of our hotels went up in category this month because they like dumped essentially a ton of their lower performing hotels or less expensive ones. So to actually see one go up from a 1 to a 2, it's kind of funny. But I agree. The Grand Cayman, Grand Hyatt is just absolutely asinine.
And let me point out that as of 12 seconds ago, you can't even book it during the summer. There's no points availability at all there during the summer, Thanksgiving, or Christmas. You can only, like, there's only points availability right now, October, November, January, February, and March. Then April, it all goes away again. So, sorry if you wanted to take your family to Grand Cayman when the kids aren't in school, even though it went up in price before it ever opened and existed. Now you have to pay more and now you can't because they're not even opening points availability. So shame on you, Grand Hyatt, Grand Cayman.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm still here for
Let
the shame
have it.
But in case anybody's wondering, and this probably isn't available in September, you can book some 35 and 40k nights.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at that and I'm like, oh,
like all of October. So yeah, like
right category in peak hurricane season.
Well, that's true, that is true. But yeah, category 8, 35, 40, 45K. Like, I know these new pricing hasn't gone into effect yet, but a lot of these nights
are... If you do want to go book it.
Yeah, a lot of these nights are 45K, which is indicative of Hyatt when they shift to a new 5, what are they called, categories?
5-tier.
A lot of
pricing.
Stuff will be in the 4th and 5th upper tiers, not 1st and 2nd.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't think we've shared our thoughts on Hyatt.
Yeah, a little confused as to where we all stand.
Enough, yeah. I'll just be blunt with y'all. This is pretty terrible. They've not gone completely dynamic, but this is pretty much as close as you can get, like Matt said, while still having a published award chart. Mm-hmm. It definitely impacts your points and miles strategies. I mean, the simple fact is Hyatt is not going to have any unique value in the points and miles space compared to Hilton, Marriott, IHG anymore. It's just going to be on par with all of those other programs. And honestly, like, maybe even worse. I think the new darling. Maybe I'm biased because I've been saying that it's been overlooked for a while, but I think that the new darling is probably Hilton going forward. You know, they don't have a published award chart. There are unpublished caps for each property. But really what it simply comes down to is that 1-to-2 transfer ratio. Like, if you've listened to past episodes, we've done some comparison where it roughly comes in line with current Hyatt pricing. With that 1-to-2 transfer ratio, the is Hilton fourth or fifth night free?
Fifth night free.
With the fifth night free, like, if you are transferring points to a hotel program, especially for aspirational properties, I think you're going to truly end up be transferring fewer points to Hilton to book comparable properties than you are with Hyatt now.
I have a real life example of this.
Oh, let's do it.
I came prepared. I'm going to use Costa Rica as an example. We've talked about the Hyatt Andaz Papagayo regularly. It's a Category 8 hotel. And with these changes, assuming because it's a very popular hotel in the points and miles space, it's going to be top pricing, the highest level most of the time. So that means you could be paying up to 75,000 points per night, whereas there is a Hilton Waldorf Astoria in the same general area.
Brand new.
Can be booked for 120,000 points per night if you find standard availability. And with the 1-to-2 transfer ratio, you'd only need 60,000 transferable points. And then you also layer on, like you said, Travis, the fifth night free. And also there's pretty regular transfer bonuses to Hilton.
So fifth night free takes it to 48K per night.
48K.
I mean, that's the same as Hyatt's eighth category, you know, 45K, all things considered.
Yeah.
That's wild. That's nuts.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing, my biggest take on this is Hyatt is trying to play with the big boys. And I mean that kind of jokingly slash also kind of insulting. Their footprint is a fraction of what IHG, Marriott, and Hilton's is. You know, it's like, what is it, like 1,800 to 7,000 properties on the road. You know, it's something like insanely, literally a quarter. So they're trying to essentially, in my opinion, step up to play with the big boys, and they don't have the footprint to support that. Their biggest value prop for loyalty stuff so far has been the award chart. Very, very favorable pricing, fixed award chart, and they've had enough high-end properties and enough places to kind of get by and do that. Now that they're trying to play in the big leagues, they're either going to have to massively expand, but I think they did that backwards. You know, you would expand first and then roll out the much more aggressive price point, or they're just, the volume just going to completely fall off. And I think that's also going to happen because, you know, Hyatt's got two sort of flexible currency transfer partners. Bilt is obviously one of them, and they've revamped recently to allow, you know, multiple cards, welcome bonus. So essentially points there are a little bit easier to earn than they were before. But the flip side is the other flexible currency that they partner with has been cranking down on eligibilities and restrictions. So those points are much harder to earn. So you combine a lot of flexible currency points that people mostly use to go to Hyatt, much harder to earn and replenish. Now you're essentially, in a lot of cases, going to be charging double for that. I mean, the redemptions there, to me, you're just going to fall off a cliff.
And guess what? Bilt also transfers to Hilton.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is totally predicated on like having two comparable properties that are priced towards the top end, like Emily's example. But let's be honest, like a lot of times, like if there's a top end Hyatt there, there's probably going to be a top end Hilton because of that higher footprint that Matt mentioned. You know, we've talked before more on the airline side about how valuable these loyalty programs are to airlines. I'm not so sure that it carries the same weight for hotels. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, but it doesn't at least make as much buzz around it as possible. But I legitimately wonder what kind of impact this is going to have for Hyatt, like truly financially, kind of backing into the business of points and miles. When you transfer points from a bank to an airline or hotel, the bank is buying those points from the banks and hotels. Now, usually at a discounted rate than what you and I can buy because they're buying a lot of them. But I wouldn't be surprised to see fewer and fewer people transferring their points over to Hyatt and using them for other redemptions. Honestly, I think it's probably going to go very similar to Marriott. Very few people transfer their points, their flexible points, to Marriott because it's not a great value, since most all of them are one-to-one unless there's a bonus, which has been pretty rare. It just doesn't make as much sense. Your points don't go as far. And now, like, that same thing is going to be true with Hyatt. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
I agree. And I also think this is not exactly something you can backpedal from. Like, they're not going to be able to come out in a year or two to say, oh, just kidding, sorry, we're hemorrhaging money and kind of need to roll things back a little bit the way they are. We're down to three price points per category. We're adding value for you. It's like,
hey. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the only way they can backpedal is by instead making their points easier to earn, like adding some kind of like premium card or increasing the welcome offers on them so that at least there's a way to earn them at a rapid pace.
Well, that's almost going to have to happen. Their welcome offers have been pretty lackluster, except for when they introduced a business card a couple of years ago. On the personal side, has been pretty lackluster for, I want to say, the last 8+ years. When the best welcome offers they ever had were when you could get two, at the time, category 1 through 7, which was the only categories they had, free night certificates, and use those at any hotel in the world. But yeah. I don't see those making an appearance anytime soon.
Yeah.
The best way that they can backtrack from this, and I'm jumping a bit ahead, honestly, is probably taking a page out of the United playbook, which we'll get to in a second. I think that how United is approaching their changes feels like it's rewarding people who actually utilize United more. Mm-hmm. And so make it more valuable for people who are actually staying at Hyatt. That's not ideal for points and miles people, but it at least creates opportunities.
I can see that this is sort of the foundation for some of that at a later point. So, you know, trying to look at it objectively, I can see where it's, you know, maybe they don't make a lot of money from all the points and miles.
Maybe.
Audience. You know, they're presumably not a high value customer, a lot of utilization of resources without a lot of cash infusion. I would presume to be a high cost, you know, essentially low upside other than selling points. I'm completely shooting in the dark here. So maybe this is just a heavy reset on, like, hey, we have to pivot hardcore because we want to go after people that actually pay us money, you know, our truly valuable customers, which, you know, is a bit ironic just because Hyatt has treated their elite members so, so well. So I kind of find this hard to believe, but if somebody came out and laid out an argument about it, I could understand and get behind it, that this is kind of the first step in laying the foundation for really going all in on their truly loyal paying customers in the next couple of years.
A quick AI overview from Google says they don't break it out specifically, but from the World of Hyatt loyalty program, they did about $1.2 billion in 2025 out of a total revenue of $7.1 billion. But that $1.2 does cover franchise fees, management fees, and marketing and loyalty fees. So, like, it's a little hard to figure out what that breakout.
Yeah, but that's like, I mean, that's 15% of revenue. So, like,
yeah,
not, I would have thought more personally, but
same.
So when you look at it from that lens, it kind of makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
And they're saying, hey, we really value the other 85% of our business.
Yeah.
And this is a drag down on, all right, that makes a little more sense to me, you know, looking at it objectively now.
I don't like how it impacts
me. I don't like
me,
it. But... Yeah, exactly. I want to be a 15%er that gets treated like the 85%ers. But, you know, with that information, I can be more understanding even if I don't like it.
All right. Let's hot seat Hyatt real quick.
Yeah.
Is global is still worth it?
No, I don't think so.
Nah. I mean, there's an argument to be made that it might be easier to get there because of the lowest tier pricing that's going down. So if you were going to, like, mattress run it, it would be cheaper. But is it worth it to do all of that for, I don't know, I guess not being rewarded as well?
I don't know if I've said it here on this pod, but I have said it for the last couple of years. that globalist is not worth it, knowing somebody that has globalist is the best way to get globalist through guest of honor. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you're traveling for work or like, I mean, hitting low category nights or whatever to get it. Like I'll do probably 35 nights at Hyatt this year, which is probably the most I've done, maybe probably ever. I have zero incentive to try and milk that up, even irregardless of this news, to try and go for like 60 nights with, even if you layer in a few on some of the co-branded cards, like that is a lot for, and the driving factor for that is just, again, the small footprint. Like it's great status with great benefits when you can use it at some of the properties, but it's just, it's so limited grand scheme of things. Like you have to build your trip around the hotel, which I know it's kind of sounds hypocritical because I literally do that. But for the, you know, average person, like that just doesn't become a practical or valuable use of it.
So if someone asked you today, should they still build Hyatt points for a trip in late 2026, 2027? What's your honest advice?
Well, I think this is why we still stress flexible currencies are the way to go. Because there's so much unknown. I mean, we know a decent amount, even though we don't know a ton. We know what is changing, but we don't know truly the impact. Once we see the rollout to see, oh, wow, everything is maximum price point in that category. This is a bloodbath. Or, yeah, looking at the like high level data of how things are spread out, there's a lot of value still to be played. Like it's not as bad as maybe we thought it'd be. That all is going to be to be determined. I have a hunch of where it's going to go. But if you're earning Hyatt points, you are locked into whatever those changes are. If you're earning flexible currencies, you have the option now to pivot and take those over to Hilton or Marriott or another program in a pinch if you need to. So, I mean, to me, it's just literally this reinforces why flexible currencies went out.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a bank of Hyatt points already and you have trips that you are certainly going to take, I would book them now. But I don't know if I would be like transferring a bunch of points into Hyatt without really knowing how all of that's gonna hit in May.
Yeah. Now is certainly not the time to be doing any speculative transfers.
Definitely no.
Yeah. I mean I'd agree with Matt. Like the real strategy doesn't change. Focus on flexible points. Like building Hyatt points just is not as good of an idea. And like the overall thing, right, is Hyatt is just coming to parity with the rest of the market.
Yeah.
Is what's happening. We're losing something that was really good, and it's just becoming the same as everything else. So it doesn't mean that Hyatt has lost all value, that it's absolutely terrible. It's just, it's not the show pony anymore of points and miles. It's just another horse in the stampede.
Well, I can't believe none of you have brought this up, so I'll bring it up on myself. I'm pretty sure it was like less than five episodes ago where we played and your boy said Hyatt, but I want that prenup. Who was correct?
We're gonna have to pull
the records.
Yep, I would like to go ahead and enforce my prenup or whatever.
Yeah.
All right. Let any closing thoughts from anyone on
the.
Nah, let's talk United.
All right, let's talk United. Starting in April 2026, United is changing how members earn and redeem miles within the United Mileage Plus program. You would think with how many times I've said that.
I was going to say it, but I'm glad you did.
Some of these things are going to be similar to Delta, but hold on. Like, don't panic. I actually, like, especially compared to Hyatt and definitely compared to Delta, like, more of this is around general earnings and redeeming, not so much that, like, award charts are going completely away. Like, I know that United really doesn't publish award charts, but they basically have them anyways. It's more just going to influence some of the nuance of how you earn them and how you redeem them. It's not catastrophic. In fact, I mentioned, you know, that Hyatt could potentially do good by copying United's playbook here to actually reward people who are loyal to their program. That's where I think United is going and actually treading that line really well. So here's what's going to happen starting in April. Award pricing. Award pricing is not inherently changing. Let me caveat that with award pricing is not announced to be changing, because with my luck, they would change it unannounced. But with the information we have right now, award pricing is not changing. Card members and people with status will get more discounts on award pricing. So card holders will get at least 10% off all award flights. This means like a flight between US and Asia that's typically 88K on a partner should be 80,000, or technically, theoretically, even cheaper. United card holders who are also elite members will get at least a 15% discount. So again, if you're a card holder and have status, you'll get an even bigger discount. But United will be showing these discounted prices to everyone, regardless of whether they qualify for the discount. So right now, you have to be logged into your account, and if you are eligible, they will show up. Now it's basically just becoming a marketing feature, being like, oh, look, you could pay less if you opened our card. At least there's some transparency there. Card members will also get better earn rates on paid travel. If you're not paying to fly, which I know is most of you, but especially business travelers, corporate travelers, and sometimes people do pay to fly, especially if you have United Travel Bank rep. So card members will get better earn rates on paid travel. So all United Elite members who are not card holders will earn 2 less miles per dollar on paid travel. Card holders will earn an additional mile per dollar on paid travel compared to current rates.
And this is an add-on to your multiplier that you get for based on your elite status, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah.
This is like more noticeable at lower status tiers. Yeah. If you're just a regular Mileage Plus member, so you really don't have any status, they just say you're a member to pretend like you have something. Getting a United card would actually double your earn rate on paid travel.
Yeah.
That's like pretty nice. If you're a basic economy flyer, I know you're hearing American Airlines award bells going off in the background right now. Basic economy will no longer earn points on a paid ticket unless you're a card holder. So that's better than what American did.
Yeah. Low bar to clear, but yeah.
low bar to clear. You don't have to pay with your United card to get these benefits. These are just benefits you get for having a United card, regardless of what bank issues it.
But if you pay with a United card, you get an even higher earn rate then.
Because you still get the bonus category on the credit card spend.
Yeah, you get the bonus category on the credit card spend, and you get a higher earn rate just by holding the card. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In good news, and this isn't like quantified yet, but in good news, United will increase the proportion of Polaris Business Class Saver Awards that it reserves for elite members and cardholders. Or, put another way, non-cardholders and non-elite members will have access to less Polaris availability. So that's it. If it hasn't been obvious, United is using this as credit card acquisition strategy and rewarding loyalty more. They're sending a very clear signal that being a card holder is one of the most valuable things to them. And it really demonstrates this, that once these go into effect, a card holder without any elite status will earn more miles per dollar on a paid United flight than someone with silver status and no credit card.
Yeah. They're basically saying, like holding a card is more valuable than having elite status.
Other than having silver status.
Well, yes. But I mean, if you like go up the ladder and you combine being a card holder with like the lower tier of status, you'll earn more that way than you would just having the higher tier of status. So they just want you to have a card. That's all.
I kind of love this change, and it seems counterintuitive. Exactly what you said. They're being 100% transparent of like, here's what we want. Here's what we're investing in. We're literally recrafting this program around our cardholders. And essentially, we're going all in on you. You know, so it's not a devaluation.
It's an enhancement for loyalty.
Yeah, literally. But it's one to me that actually means that. Most of the time these announcements come out of like, I kind of joked earlier, but like, hey, we're making things easier and better for our members. No, like this literally is that, except they're further specifying that if you're a cardholder, things are getting better for you. And literally that's what we want. So it is literally the almost opposite of every announcement the programs make. Between what they say and what they actually do, this is no literally, we're aligning what we say with what we do.
And I'm obviously a United fanboy, so I'm sure someone's going to rave in the comments about how I'm biased.
I'm not a United fanboy. As the only person that doesn't live in a United hub here, I actually really like it. So yeah. There we go.
Like when United first did this of like restricting access to award space for elite members or people with credit cards, like they actually followed through. In fact, we sent out an award alert like within the past month where United had a ton of Polaris availability between the US and Japan later this year, but you had to be a cardholder or have elite status to unlock it.
It's been driving me nuts because I usually book 70K Polaris from the US to Europe.
Yeah.
With Aeroplan. Literally there's no Polaris through Aeroplan. It hasn't been for like a year. It's driving me nuts.
And meanwhile, as the United fanboy, like I've gotten so, I think Polaris is, at the end of this year, will be the product that I have flown the most out of any premium product. I've got it. I flew it to Australia. My wife flew it back. She flew it there with me. And then she flew it back from New Zealand. She's flown it back from Indonesia, our trip to Japan. Yes, I booked that. Like we're flying Polaris there. She's flying Polaris there. We're both flying it back. Like it sucks for people who don't have it. But what that means is that saver availability, the pool of people available to book it gets smaller because like Matt said, they're not opening up as much to partners, which in the grand scheme of things sucks, but it's really easy to unlock. Like just
they're not playing games. Card. They're making it very clear. Here's what you have to do to find it and have access to it.
Yeah.
You do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it does put people in it who are over 524 in kind of like an interesting spot, because maybe you are a United fanboy like Travis, but you don't have a card for some reason and you might not be eligible. So then
does
you're
the United
like
debit
out.
Card access this?
I don't think so, but don't forget about the First Hawaiian Bank United card.
You have to be a resident of Hawaii. I'm 95% sure for that.
I think it was their business one that you didn't have
to. Oh, that's right. There was that caveat.
Which we haven't tested that yet.
Well, yeah, so it could be both. But the fine print on the business one legit said it. Unsure on the personal one. I think you're right.
Or I think it was the other. One of them said it.
Or vice versa. Right.
I did read that the like no annual fee card and the debit card, I think you have to spend a minimum of $10,000 on them in order for those ones to unlock these benefits.
Once, like at one time or per year? Sorry, I'm really putting you on the spot.
No, that's a good question. What's new at United?
Yeah. But yeah, no, back to your point. I mean, that the above 524 crowd is certainly in a pickle here, potentially on it. Don't forget, if you have multiple players in your house, the other person can do it, have access to it. United does have some points pooling plays that you can do. And also you can book flights for other people with your points. So, you know, just because I'm above 524 doesn't mean my wife couldn't get one if she was eligible and do still kind of have some access to it that way.
Do be cautious on the points pooling. I believe that once you
can
pool
only
your
book.
Points, you can only book United flights.
Correct.
United, which, United to be fair, Metal, is like God, all that my United miles go for now anyways. So,
I do have the answer, by the way.
Good.
The debit card and the no annual fee one, you have to spend $10,000 in a calendar year.
Okay. So not worth it for this, but.
No.
Anyways. Tons of United co-branded cards that are on offer that would have access to this. So,
yeah.
Overall, the reason why I think this isn't such a negative change is because, like Matt said, United has already restricted premium cabin availability pretty hard to partner. So you already needed to be booking through United most of the time. They're increasing the ratios, which will mean more Polaris availability. It should theoretically cost less if you meet these criteria. I'm not too worried about the earn rate. Again, that's going to apply to a small majority of people. If you're a points and miles person, an average person that's not traveling for work, like, that's not going to matter as much. But the fact that you just have one card and you get access to more international long haul business class availability that's not open to partners and they're going to charge you less for it. Like, it's hard for me to see the cons whenever they already were restricting it pretty heavily. Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah.
I have one.
Go ahead.
Oh, go. No?
No, all you.
Okay. My one hot take prediction. This is rolling out on April 2nd. Who's to say on April 1st, they will not increase award pricing by 10% across the board so that, you know, yay, we have the card now and we get a 10% discount on award availability, award pricing. And it's just the same that it was before.
That'd be a cruel April Fool's joke.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I mean, on the surface, it looks, for me as a United hub person in Denver,
woo-hoo,
and as somebody who flies United a lot for work, so like the paid travel is interesting to me as well, because I'll have a better earn rate on that. I don't do those. That's just for like miles you can redeem. That's not for like status qualifying ones, is it?
Correct. Yeah. That's my under. Like status qualifying is dollars spent in PQP.
In segment. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess it doesn't really help me get any closer to status, but it does. Like, I'll take more United miles than I earn on my paid flights. That's good with me.
Yeah, I'm as a non-United hub resident, I don't know that it affects me more than anything else. Any other kind of change would. However, I do feel like my next card will be a United card just to have access to this. I mean, the reason for that is just because I'm so used to and enjoy flying Polaris that I want access to it. The problem is I feel so programmed to never book United flights with United miles.
Yeah.
That it feels sacrilegious that I should be using a Star Alliance partner to book them. So to now have to book with their own currency to me feels wrong, but that I guess I'll get over it.
But end of the day, I'm throwing this question at you, like you're paying a maybe 10,000 mile premium over what partners would charge, but you get more availability.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's yeah, I'm not saying it's a problem. It's more just I've so ingrained it in my head to like never book United flights with United miles to now go do it. Just feels wrong. I feel like I'm breaking my own rules.
Yeah.
But it's kind of the same deal with Hyatt. It's less of an impact. I've always struggled transferring United points or flexible points to United unless in a pinch. But now it feels like there's a lot more value to those. Just like I said, because I would always potentially transfer into another Star Alliance partner. But now it feels like because assuming the availability is much more amped up, like they're saying, it isn't, I don't, in this case, have any reason to believe that it wouldn't be. There's some more added value there.
On like the weird thing is both of these happening at the same time.
Yeah.
All of the flexible currencies that transfer to Hyatt also transfer to United.
Yep.
Yeah. Like,
so it maybe takes a little bit of the sting out of it if you're shifting your hotel strategy to different flexible points to transfer to Hilton. And then you've got these ones that you planned to transfer to Hyatt. And now it's, what do I do with these? Oh, well, I'll just transfer them to United. And
who's the biggest beneficiary of the Hyatt devaluation? I bet nobody thought United would be.
Yeah.
An airline, of course.
Yeah, an airline really benefiting from a hotel change.
An airline that partners with Marriott for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So for the average person, is it worth it to open one of the United cards from any of the banks that offer them to get these benefits?
I mean, I think so. I mean, I would not put it at the top of your list. I would evaluate the wallet. I mean, I still think it's kind of a middle of the road type card, but it certainly might move up a few bumps, especially with a strong welcome offer, just for some of the access it unlocks here. Like, I think it would be a good play to have one in your wallet. Just so you can have some access to some of these new benefits, particularly the expanded saver award availability for premium cabin.
Yeah. And a lot of times the offers are like a waived annual fee for the first year. So literally no cost to see if the benefits are worth getting the card.
I agree. Says the bias United.
Yeah. I mean, does this change anything for you? Like, you'll earn more because
Yeah.
You're already a cardholder.
Honestly, like, the thing that it might change, in general, it's not going to change anything. I already have status above silver tier. I think I dropped down to gold this year, but that's okay. And I am a cardholder. The only thing that it legitimately might change is I might find myself using a United card to pay and book for my United travel more. I don't fully know that that's the case, though, because a number of the bank cards that earn the flexible currencies earn a higher rate through the bank's travel portals now than any of the co-branded cards do. And if I can just transfer those, then like feels like the better option, since I'll still earn points on those flights anyway. So I don't think it functionally is going to change anything for me, other than I'm sure that I'm going to have more points transferred to United than I typically do.
Yeah.
So, all right. So Hyatt, United, which devaluation hurts more, if it's not obvious from our commentary, but let's just be as clear as we can with everyone out there.
I mean,
it's a no-brainer here. Hurts big time. I mean, really, like for me, the biggest way it hurts is Hyatt's essentially just devaluing up to like 50% across their entire award chart, or 100% depending on how you look at the math. But I mean, for me, the biggest impact it'll have is, especially on the aspirational side of things. I mean, most people, not everybody, a lot of people use points and miles to travel in a way that they wouldn't normally with cash money. I do the same. I go stay at hotels that cost $2,000 a night. I would never pay my own cash money for that.
Yeah.
But I'm able to use points to stay at Park Hyatts and other higher end places. And I love doing it. So for that to essentially double in pricing means that that's probably going to happen at a minimum half of the time.
Yeah.
And so that really hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, agree completely with Matt. Hyatt was kind of like the darling of the points and miles community, so this is certainly a hit. I would say like the United change, I don't know if I would even call it really a devaluation, but it has much less of an impact, I think, on the broader points and miles strategy. Most people at some point will have or will either get or have already had a United card. I'm pretty sure we rank it like top three on our best cards list right now. So like most people will probably have gotten it and either still have it in their wallet or be down to get it again. I mean, maybe Travis will disagree with this, but prior to this announcement, it's not like everyone was clamoring over United as the most favorable airline loyalty program.
Should have been.
So like this announcement changes things, but it actually like improves it for probably most of our community. So it's like you're taking something that was like kind of middle of the pack and you're making it better for like a specific segment of your audience. Whereas Hyatt was like, oh, this is your favorite thing ever. It's destroyed.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Hyatt is worse. I'm very, very cautiously optimistic that some hotel program, this is really daydreaming here, but maybe some hotel program will pull a Virgin Atlantic or a Flying Blue and say, hey, there's this gap in the market and we can make a lot of money by people transferring their points to us. So we're going to improve our program and our pricing. So we will be the new darling for a little bit.
Well, you know, what's funny about this whole deal is that the day after the Hyatt news came out, literally the next day, Hilton changed a bunch of the welcome offers on their co-branded cards.
Oh, that's true.
Very, very improved offer. So I'm pretty sure that was coincidental, just because I'm knowing how quickly those things come together. They get planned for like months in advance.
Yeah.
So they could not have timed that one any better.
Mm. Yeah.
I think the biggest thing about Hyatt, kind of what you were saying, Emily, that's been the darling of the points and miles world, I think I would have been much more
receptive if they had just kind of ripped the bandit off every year versus just one massive, like, cut my arm off. Yeah. Like, I would rather, and that's kind of what the other programs do, is, you know, progressive enhancements is what I think they probably all like to call it, or small incremental devaluations versus just, you know, laying off half the company and, you know, at once instead of like, well, that's probably a terrible analogy, but, you know, whatever, like,
They gave us the middle finger.
Yeah, exactly.
They gave us the middle finger, and the other ones were like, hey, we're gently stabbing you a little bit at a time.
Right. Exactly.
But they're using that to their advantage. Like that, they're in the all the communications, all the communications from like the Hyatt marketing team or whatever team it is, have been like, hey, we really haven't hurt you guys in a while, so now it's time for a big
overdue.
and it's just like the part about it that's the most annoying is the egregious, here's how we're making it better, we're making it great, blah blah blah, like, just stop lying.
You can transfer points online to your friends now.
Whoa,
great.
Which you'll have to do to have enough to book of all the points you've been saving for your trip next year.
Literally true.
Hyatt, if anyone wants to come on and speak for yourself, reach out to us. We will give you a platform to try to defend yourself. We promise.
There's only one promise that we'll be nice. Debate team person on this podcast, so.
But we would be happy to take a representative from Hyatt to maybe come and explain, even if some of the business, like some of the reasoning behind it, help us understand.
Honestly,
like,
I would be more interested in that side of things.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just the nerd in me.
You probably won't successfully defend yourself. Like, you will from a business side. I don't think there's a world where you defend yourself from this actually being any positive for your customer base. I don't know if points and miles people are necessarily their customer base, but I'm going to call them that. Look, biggest takeaway here, don't hoard your points, says the guy with like... 200,000 plus Hyatt points that I've been hoarding for a while for a specific trip that I haven't been able to pull together. And now I'm kind of bummed about it. They can be devalued at any time. Time to expand beyond the beloved Hyatt. If you have any aspirational stays in mind, book them before May. If you're family planning around school breaks, plan and book now as far in advance as you can. Just not at the Grand Hyatt Grand Cayman, because you're not getting that around school breaks.
I think this is an important one to talk about, expanding beyond Hyatt. I mean, everybody, we haven't had to for a while. So it's just Hyatt is like the first place people look for points, miles, travel. And then if that doesn't work, then it's look at other big brands or Airbnbs or other kind of things. I think those days are kind of gone. I think, you know, we've talked about it before. Accor Hotels has kind of got a great program outside of the U.S., a couple transfer partners, great redemptions. I'm not saying it's hype, but like this opens up the avenue for programs like that to get a lot more visibility and insights into it, just for more options.
Yeah. Like I know that there's a lot of people out there listening who feel devastated because their points and mile strategies has revolved around Hyatt. And like now you're being forced to have to learn and figure out other ones. And that's scary. That's hard. Reach out to the Starwood crowd.
I still have that on my phone in the Apple wallet. I still have my SPG like member card in there and I refuse to delete it.
If there's anything I can tell you, it's going to be okay. You can still redeem your points for Hyatt. It's just not as good as it was before. Like that's the simple thing. Yes, we have said a lot of bad things. It's just not as good as it was before, and that's okay. Even if you still just want to redeem for Hyatt, go for it. There's absolutely nothing wrong. You're just not going to get the awesome starling of points and miles that it was anymore. It doesn't mean that it's terrible. It just means that it's not as good of an opportunity as it once was. And in probably 4 to 5 years from now, I'm sure we will have at least had this conversation yet again about Hyatt and Hilton and Marriott, of how it got worse. And we learn, we adapt, and we adjust. And maybe it means having to learn another points program, but you already did it once. I believe in you that you can do it again.
It's like that saying, why does nobody ever tell you you're in the good old days while you're actually about the good old days when you're in them? It's like, I actually feel like we have been for a while and we're kind of overdue for on the Hyatt side. So
yeah, that's why
it's a sour taste, but
I hinted at it and I signed the prenup. We knew it was inevitable. I just did not know it was like a month later. I thought it was 6 months later or 6 years or who knows.
Hopefully you got that signed and notarized.
Yeah, I'll have to check. I think I sent in one of my points transfer form and I'm waiting to get back.
Well, I hear that one person might be out of a job soon.
Exactly. Maybe that's why it was never executed.
If you are that one person as well, we would love to have you on the podcast too. And also, if you do listen, I am very sorry for the jokes that we made on your behalf. So, any last and final words? Do we just need a moment of silence for the World of Hyatt program?
No, we have some booking to do.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. A lot of clicking is going to be happening after this.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. So, you were going to say something?
I was going to say RIP Hyatt. My other thoughts were seeing how these changes that United has made to kind of like reward cardholders more. If that goes well for them, I would not be surprised to see other people execute that. I know other airlines already have, like Delta already does that. So keep your eyes peeled for that. I think my big takeaway is just things change fast. Like, it's nice that we got a couple months advance notice on some of this stuff, but they change fast. Just as one hotel program gets devalued, there's actually a new way you can transfer your points from that flexible currency. You can transfer them to Wyndham. So maybe we'll have to look into that now.
Adapt and evolve.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, loyalty programs are always going to evolve, and you can listen to the naysayers that say points and miles are dead, or you can adapt with us. Sometimes that means prices go up. Sometimes it means sweet spots disappear. But here's the thing. This game's not over. It's just different. There's going to be people saying it's over. Like, they've been saying that for a long time. And I'm still using points for trips.
Yeah. You just have to look at them as a depreciating asset. They're never going to appreciate. They're just always going to become less and less valuable. That doesn't make them worth zero.
Yeah. Hyatt still has value. United miles maybe have slightly more value now.
Yeah,
actually,
that could be that's one of those outliers you see on the chart.
Yeah, you know, but the truth is, you can't play 2026 like it's 2018. Like, it is a different environment, and that's why, you know, you're doing good by listening here, so we can keep you up to date. Thanks. So, if you want help navigating these shifts, like these ones specifically, make sure you're in our Facebook group, over 400,000 people sharing real data points daily. Subscribe, leave us a comment. That way you can stay up to date with the show, where we'll keep sharing what you need to know about these programs, changes, how we think it's going to impact things, and how it's influencing point strategy.
And if you're booking a bunch of Hyatt properties before the deadline, let us know what you're booking. See how much you paid for it in points and where you're going.
Yeah. But share after you book it.
After you book, of course.
Fun anecdote. That happened to me where I shared a word availability on Qantas to Australia for my Solomon Islands trip later this year with one of our award bookers.
Yep.
I shared it with Greg and Lauren. And then Greg was like, oh, sweet, I got it round trip. And I was like, wait a second, I didn't check for the return. I just got my outbound book. He booked the return and it was gone.
Not to throw our award booking team under the bus, but I shared a fun thing to Marrakesh for the bunch of availability before I had booked it. And Lord, did I not see an award alert go out about availability to Marrakesh like an hour later? It's like, come on now.
They're quick.
Yeah.
they're on it. So yes, book before you tell your friends
or coworkers.
Until next time, keep earning, keep booking. We'll see you, or you'll see us. I guess we technically don't see you, but we'll talk to you next time.
Okay, it's time to wrap up now.
Goodbye.